Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Mickey Fisher, the creator and showrunner for Reverie, a new technological fantasy dreamscape show on NBC, which you should be watching Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Welcome to the show, Mickey.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hey, I just wanted to point out real quick, too, I'm sort of co-showrunning with Thompson Jurgi, who he's one of the other executive producers and shows. I just want to shout him out here at the top, too.
Cool. So it's a team effort for bringing us this very, very intriguing, emotionally draining show.
Yeah, I always say, you know, it's like it takes a village to raise a child and a television show.
So where did the idea for Reverie come from? I know our fans should know you from Extant, but Reverie is such a different feel from that.
Yeah, it really is. You know, after Extant got canceled, I had a little bit of time off. I did a short stint on Mars, a show for Nat Geo, not the planet itself. And that was a really interesting kind of process. It was much more grounded in real science and the actual ideas and plans for how we might get there, you know, based on people who are working at NASA and Elon Musk. So it was a bit of a departure from the imagined sort of, and the artificial intelligence kind of world of Extant. And then I had a little bit of time off from that, and I was reading about virtual reality and how we might use that in the future, and also just companies like Facebook who are pouring billions of dollars into this technology in the hopes that, you know, people like us would spend more time in it in the future and planning on that. And I realized, like, I didn't really know anything about it, and maybe, like, you know, for writers, this is going to be an avenue that we want to explore. And so I ordered Google Cardboard, like the most rudimentary version of it that you can get, for, you know, $20 on Amazon or whatever. And it showed up, and I folded it up and put my phone in, and in my living room was, you know, transported from my living room to a jungle, basically. And it was so much fun. That moment I was like, if these are the silent movie days of this technology, if it's, you know, when it comes to the day where we can design and build the world of our dreams and we can live there, who's going to want to come back? And I was like, we might be doomed as a species, you know, and I'm always fascinated, but I will say the things that, the threads that run through Extant and this, and the things that I think it's one of the themes that I'm, always drawn to in science fiction for myself is like the idea that technology is just a tool, and it really comes down to the choice, and it comes down to not losing that human connection. And that was a part of Extant and the relationship between you know, Halle Berry's character and her son, the humanic Ethan. It was about the importance of her connecting to him and forging a human connection with something that wasn't quite human. And Reverie is really about that as well. It's like how we use this technology. It can bring us closer. It could help build bridges rather than walls, and it could help heal. But there is a danger to it as well.
And we're starting to explore that dangerous side. This week's episode was episode 7, and we had already seen a glimpse of a darker intent that someone could use Reverie for. But this one was an actual one that was connected to Monica and the Department of Defense. And the way the writers handled the torture, making the kid think that torture, that it was real when it wasn't real, and just such a delicate subject given, you know, real world the past 5 years, and the way you focused on Mara trying to convince this kid that he's okay and that she can get him out was just so heart-wrenching. I was alternately cursing and cheering. I'm like, oh, these guys are doing it again.
Well, you know, I mean, to me, this episode was one of those paradigm shifts where there were, along the way, there's sort of like the class, you know, we feel like the classic Coke version of a Reverie episode would be, you know, there's a client who's built this world for themselves, And the real mystery is, like, why did this person get stuck? What is it that the program is giving them that they weren't finding in the real life? And that through the help of the program and then specifically Mara and the team, like, how do they reach them and convince this person to leave that behind? But then there are these paradigm shifts when we start looking at it, how people would use these programs. It also generated a lot of really interesting story ideas. One was like the episode 4 with the guy kind of like rehearsing a heist, building using all the specs and security videos and all those kind of things. Like, well, that may be something that somebody could do that for one of these days. I think that there are already companies who are using it for training modules, and you know, you build your loading dock or whatever in virtual reality, and then you can train your employees how to do that. And so it seemed to us like, well, it would be really cool if somebody, what if you could build Fort Knox and rehearse your heist down to, you could map out your route, avoiding the security cameras. You could practice the routines of the guards and that kind of stuff. Of course, we wanted to just make it more less about the money and make it more personal, which ended up being this medical thing. But then, of course, one of the other ones is going to be the military use for that. I think that like a virtual black site seems inevitable. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, it's like that has to, maybe that already exists somewhere. But that also came from, and really the character of Monica was inspired a lot by, I read this book that was all about the sort of research that's going on in brain computer interfaces and implants, and how companies from how these companies were being invested in by basically a DARPA, you know, that they were funding this, you know, with an eye towards, you know, eventually there will be some military application for it. And it really comes back to that question we were talking about at the beginning of, you know, intent and how you use it. You know, like you can use nuclear power to, you know, to power cities, and, or you could use it to build the bomb. And so those questions I think are always interesting, and certainly a technology like this, That just seemed to us in the writer's room like, of course they will do something like this. And as we were talking about it, it just seemed interesting, like, that it related to a lot of stuff that's going on in the world today.
Yeah, and that episode where, and I have to give a shout out to David Clayton Rogers, the way he played that character trying to figure out the heist with his OCD issues was just delightful.
Here's a weird David Clayton Rogers fact, and I was like, I said this on Twitter, but I'll tell you can hear. But the word he was actually in an episode of Extant in season 2. He was in the second episode. It was an episode that I wrote, and Hallie's character sort of getting to the bottom of, like, you know, this sort of, you know, like miraculous birth kind of thing, and she goes to this young couple. And she's sitting down, her and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, they're sitting down with this couple, and the couple is describing how they met. And it's David Clayton Rogers, I think, who says, like, well, we met in Reverie. And I came up with the name for this sort of second, you know, virtual world, you know, where people can meet up and chat and date and all this kind of stuff. Back during Exit is when I came up with the name for it. And I didn't realize he was the same guy. He was played by David Clayton Rogers. I didn't realize he was the same guy until in post-production. I was looking at it and I was like, man, this guy looks a lot like Paul Rudd in some of these angles. And I remember, like, man, there was another actor who looked a lot like Paul Rudd. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, this is the same guy. And not only that, but he's talking about Reverie in Extant, and now he's in Reverie here too. So
that's awesome.
Weird coincidence, yeah. I love that. And his wife, Sally Pressman, was in episode 6. She was the dancer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
But
other strange coincidence.
Yeah, it literally, you have convergences of just small worlds, and that is actually very cool, because I've been a fan of David since H+, the digital series, that YouTube thing that came out 4 or 5 years ago. Absolutely loved him in that. But just...
Was that the J.J. Abrams or Bryan Singer? Who was that?
I think it was both of them, actually.
Yeah. And it was a similar thing, right? Wasn't there a brain computer, like, implant?
Mm-hmm.
He's so good, David Clayton Rogers. He's just a great actor, and very, you know, you just feel for him right off the bat.
Well, shout out to David.
Yeah, shout out to David.
But yeah, the stories that your team has come up with so far for Reverie, that was one of the big things that I was worried about, that we'd get into like a procedural loop with, someone has some sort of emotional trauma, Mara has to go in and talk them out. And I'm like, where else can we go with this? Because we know Monica's gonna sit here and there's going to be a military connection eventually that Alexis and Paul are going to be stubborn about. They're not going to want to go there, but it's going to happen. And sure enough, we're starting to get the little clashes with Monica. But then in this week's episode, we see maybe Monica's not as heartless and cold and dangerous as we were imagining she could be. And this is just the potential for so many stories of what can people bring out of Reverie that they keep. That's kind of got me intrigued, because people, someone's going to ask for the from the Matrix, the I know Kung Fu scenario.
Yes, exactly. I will say quickly about Monica. I mean, one of the things, there's a line that Charlie had where he's basically saying, you told me you wanted to use this for soldiers with PTSD. And she says, I do. And that is, I mean, that is something that hopefully we get to explore in some way, because that's one of the real life applications that people are using virtual reality for, is to treat, to treat post-traumatic stress, or to also to deal with, certain phobias, fear of flying. So they put you in a virtual airport, and you condition yourself to be uncomfortable in those situations. And so I think, like, kind of jumped on that, the military thing early by saying, like, of course they're going to use this, but there will also be, I think, some benevolent uses for it too. So the military, of course, they'll use it for some of those things, like, virtual black site. But I do think there are benevolent uses for it that they'll find as well. I think it's useful to, like, to help soldiers transition from the battlefield to back to civilian life.
Nice. And I will admit, having been tweeting with some of the people who are doing the writing and the directing, because they are eager and entertaining during the live tweets on Wednesday nights, and just see this week the banter between Jessica Liu and Sindel Ramamurthy was hilarious.
I think she had a lot of, like, blackmail material in him from that flying day.
I believe unauthorized behind the scenes footage taken without
Yeah.
his knowledge is how they put But
Yeah, they were quite a pair. And that's one of the great things about this cast, is they really had a great time together and got along really well. And it was, people talk about, it's like one of the boring things to talk about, 'cause everybody loves everybody, but it makes, I tell you, it might make for boring press, but it makes for a much more pleasant working environment when everybody's having fun.
The cast you've assembled, they have an on-screen chemistry that feels grounded in reality. Like, all of these folks have worked together for years. Tell me about the casting process, about what did you have any certain actors in mind, any certain personality types in mind when you went to cast these main roles?
Well, I mean, it really did start with Mara. I mean, that's first and foremost, like, when you're in the pilot process, it's so much about you're it's like getting shot out of a cannon. Basically everybody gets their pickups around the same time, and so there's this mad scramble for talent, and everybody's and that year it was funny, because there was a whole Deadline article right in the middle of this process while everybody was kind of chasing Sarah Shahi down. And she, for Mara, one of the things I talked about early on with the producers and the network and Amblin and the casting folks is, it needed to be somebody that was, that you would spill out your whole life story to, that it was warm and empathetic and engaging. But it also, because she was a hostage negotiator and that she would, spend time on a police force, you wanted to know somebody that can handle herself. And then there might be some action components to these things. But we really need somebody who could kind of run the gamut of, and I knew Sarah from just as a fan from watching Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew she had that physicality, as Shaw, and she was like, she had that physicality already, but she also has this sort of wonderful openness. and that. And so when we started talking about her, I knew she was really the perfect, perfect person for this. And that really becomes kind of like you're sort of building an ensemble around that person. And I had written both because I wanted this to be a vision of like the future that I want to live in. I wanted it to be a really diverse cast. And so I had written both Alexis and Paul with specific, I think Alexis in the very, very initial thing, I even wrote her very specifically as like maybe Korean, because I wanted to be to sort of subvert the normal, like, Zuckerberg type person that you might see in that role. I didn't want it to be like a young white tech bro. And so, it just seemed to like moving away from that. Who's like, what's the fresh version of this? And also to make this a sort of inclusive reality that I want to be a part of. And also like to think science fiction always does really well, going back to Star Trek and things like that. And Paul the same way, like I had written him to be East Asian because of like the mandalas and things like that too. There was, that somebody who's creating these worlds who would have drawn those symbols from their own, from their own life and their own cultures. And so those two were really, really specifically for that reason. And Dennis, when he came in, that was somebody that I think when I pitched it, I was, because you always sort of pitch these prompts, somebody like this or something. And I was always sort of when I wrote it, I think it was imagining somebody more like, Gary Oldman or somebody like that, who was kind of a little more grizzled, a little more, but I was already picturing him, I guess, in like Batman mode. but I look like then somebody when they brought up Dennis's name, go, oh, absolutely, that's 100% what we need, because you need somebody who is, who also has that degree of warmth, but also like when they turn it on and you want to believe that this person worked their way up, chief of police, they've been a cop, they had that street smarts and sensibility. But they could also have this father figure relationship to both Mara and Alexis, and I think he brings that all of that so well. Like there's a scene with, you see these scenes with Alexis, and there's this sort of warmth to him. You can see that he cares about these people deeply. And then there's a scene with Oliver where Oliver turns on him, and you just see the shift in Dennis's eyes, and you go, yeah, I would mess with that guy. And then with Catherine Morris, like she, we wanted somebody that could be really Charlie's equal in this. We kind of talked about them as the adults in the room and the people who play chess instead of checkers and that. And so we wanted somebody who was really formidable, alluring, somebody who has a sort of air of mystery, but also just like super smart. And I think Catherine has all that stuff and more. And they have such great chemistry together. From their very first scene in the pilot, she and Dennis, when we were filming it, people were like, "Oh, these two going to end up together," because they just had this certain instant chemistry. And you're like, "Oh, let's see where this goes. Let's play it slow. Let's see what happens." So. But I think we got so lucky with this whole cast. I've felt so grateful because you really we could turn to any one of them for a story or a scene and different emotional ranges and sense of humor, and I just feel like they can kind of do it all.
Yeah, like I said, I started enjoying the interplay that was being built up as it was coming along, because you see, Alexis is the pure coder. She just wants to be left alone to make improvements to her code. Paul is the dreamer and the scientist. He's fascinated by the potential of reverie that hasn't even been thought of yet. And he's hoping Mara can help him get there because of her connection and her empathy and her insight. And then just Charlie trying to, protect his kids. And you have Monica, who's the wild card, and both Charlie and Monica know that you have a real world out there with real dangers, And maybe the rest of the team isn't ready to face that, but they know that it's out there and they're prepared for things to go sideways. And like you said, Oliver showing up kind of was that first curveball because he's not stable. He's kind of mean. He, you know, he's trying to play somebody, but you don't know why yet. And you just took congrats on casting that too, because Oliver stepped in and I'm like, oh no, he's got to go.
I don't want to say too much about it because there's a lot more coming up with him, obviously, and he's, you know, he's got his own issues and his own and his own point of view about the program, and which, you know, we're going to see all that play out over the next few episodes.
I am a little annoyed that there's only 3 episodes left, but the episodes are appearing on Hulu, so people can binge the 7 episodes that have already aired. Hint, hint, go watch them on Hulu, people. It's worth it.
Please catch up and join us for the last couple.
Yeah, the last few episodes, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Eastern. You can live tweet along with everybody. Have a lot of fun. But what can you say about the upcoming episodes that wouldn't venture too deeply into spoiler territory but could entice someone to do a little binge and then watch along with us?
Sure. I mean, I could say that there are, along the way, one of the concepts that we really dug into and one of the things that was most exciting to me, especially once I started working with Tom Sangiorgi, the showrunner, and the rest of the writers, was this idea that, like Spotify, like Pandora, that the program is reading you as you're using it. And that really, and we saw this in the pilot with the butterfly, it starts to surface these things. And so Tom coined this early on, we started working together, and I thought it was real interesting, which is that the show in a lot of ways is about the distance between want and need, that you design this program thinking it's giving you the thing that you want. You want to be with your wife who passed on, or you want to live out an adventure as an international spy. But the more that you're doing that, the more that you're interacting with the program and these avatars, that it's starting to surface these deeper issues and bring them out. And so, of course, the program is going to do that to Mara, who's doing this more than anybody and who's having a wider experience by the fact that she's going into all these different reveries and having these intense experiences with people. The whole time the program is reading her as well. And then as we saw at the end of episodes, we know that this thing happened to Mara in her past where, she found herself in this domestic violence situation. Her sister and her niece were both killed, by her brother-in-law, and then we realize at the end of episode 6, spoiler alert, it's spoilers for people who are binging, but there's a big turn in the story there that takes us back to that moment in the past, and that those issues are still very much alive for her in the real world. And so she has this big event in the past that I don't think it's a spoiler to say that between all the stuff that's going on in New York Tech, all the stuff that's been happening in her life, the program is going to force her to confront some of those things. And I think the last couple episodes are really almost like a two-part finale in a way that brings all this stuff to a head. And so really, I think the last two are really, really emotional, really exciting, really big, for us. I think it's a cool way to pay off this idea that the program really surfaces the thing that you need to deal with and heal.
And in the long run, that can do a lot of good for humanity because there are a lot of people who are hurting. But as always, you're going to have people looking for the money angle, the power angle, the control angle. And I'm looking forward to seeing where Monica's people could take this, where Oliver himself could take this, and what pops up in Mara's past that may question this, because the teaser for next week's episode was just painful to watch, where she goes on to a totally paranoid rant, and it's disturbing, and I'm stressed, but eager, looking forward to watching that.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is. It is. And I will voice some comments I saw on Twitter Wednesday night. The people who are shippers of Paul and Mara are not happy that she's hooking up with Chris. Just saying.
Chris was there at a very intense period of time, and that,
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
There's a lot of complicated emotional stuff mixed up in there.
People are complicated creatures, aren't we?
We definitely are. We definitely are. But I get it. Listen, I, like those. You look at Paul and Mara. You go, yeah, these two, they make a great couple, right?
And then Chris steps in and messes everything up. So what can you tell us, or is there anything you can tell us about a potential season two?
We're still waiting to hear about that. It's, I think there, you know, it's, I don't think any decisions have been made, or at least, that we've heard of. And I think, it's a summer season. It's not, unfortunately, it's not like everything is a little down this summer. But we've got a core audience, and that audience has stayed with us throughout the season. And they're enthusiastic and engaging online, and they're vocal about their love of the show. And so I'm really grateful for that. I will say that, that we've spent a lot of time talking about, and Tom and I, we've met with a couple of writers, talking about, again, this model of a serialized story. What's the bigger emotional arc for Mara and Alexis, all the people at New York Tech over the course of the season, and Monica, a deeper emotional story for Monica, really getting into why she is the way she is and how she came to this, too. But then we've also, so we have, a bigger plan for that. And there are some things you'll see by the end of this that there'll be threads. You go, okay, well, we're going to have to get into that in season two. But then there also, we've talked about this sort of variety of the episodic stories too. And looking at the ways that people are using virtual reality in the real world now and shifting those paradigms, given the sort of the core episodes of these emotional stories, people who build these fantastic worlds. And that's also kind of important too. If we get a second season, let's get into a little bit more of the fantastical nature of these worlds and people who build, who have started to figure out ways that they can, kind of, you see Paul, he's sort of bend the rules of, bend the laws of physics a bit, or bend reality a bit more. And, we did want to do that in the first season because we wanted to really give people a chance to get rooted in the foundation of the concept of the show before we start making it too crazy. But now that we have that foundation, I feel like there's a bit more to explore there. So we have some exciting stories to tell. Hopefully we'll get the chance to tell them. And I imagine we'll know in the next few weeks. And I will say that it was important to us that this season we tell a complete story. And so I think there'll be a lot of resolution to the questions that we brought up, and then we raised some more. But I think for people, if this is it, and sometimes that's the case, I think it will be a satisfying conclusion.
Well, hopefully we will get to go beyond that. But if we have a little bit of closure, that is so much better than what we typically get with these really cool genre shows. The visual effects that are in here, especially when you're coming in and out of the reverie, and the technology, the glowing pads, all of that just looks so cool.
I appreciate that. We had a great visual effects team. We had a different house on the pilot. There's a lot of the effects on the pilot. This Zoic and this great VFX supervisor, who've been the VFX supervisor on X-Men as well. And then moving into the series, moved out here, we started working with this house called COSA, and our supervisor, this guy Chris Martin. And it really was the challenge week to week. It's like, how do we bring these worlds to life? And there was a lot. How do we bring these worlds to life? And there were a lot of digital set extensions. There's a lot of stuff that you don't see as much because it's kind of hidden. We shot here in LA, and we had to turn that into, turn it into a James Bond spy film, or turn it into any of these different kind of worlds we've gone into. I think they just did a great job with that.
The one that opened with the bank robbery scene was very, very fun looking.
Yeah, that is one that we shot on the Universal lot, which is where we shot. And I'll tell you, that was episode 3, and we had this concept kind of early on that we were working with the directors, which is like, you know, because this is a virtual world, maybe we don't have to fill out all the edges of the frame. Like, if you're looking, the fact that this is sort of artificial, maybe okay. And, you know, you look further down the street and you're like, there's a crowd here, but like further down the street. And then we very quickly found out that, like, no, that just looks weird on film. And so originally it was like, you know, in the earlier cuts of that, the way that we shot it, using that as a concept, you know, once you've got a wider look, you're like, wow, everybody's clustered in this downtown, but like, there's nobody back, you know, 2.5 blocks away. And then it just ended up looking weird, especially when the idea is to keep telling people, you know, in the show that like, this basically is reality. You know, it feels very real. And so the fact that it didn't look very real, we ended up having to, you know, kind of condense closer, but I think it helped that sequence in that it just sort of felt more, you know, visceral and kind of close up. And that was another idea too. We're like, well, you know, who wouldn't want to play cops and robbers? And that's like the grown up version of cops and robbers, you know.
Well, hopefully you will get to continue to spin more virtual worlds for us to explore and enjoy this show. Tell our listeners where they can find you online.
You can find me online on Twitter, @ @MickeyFisher73. I think that's the same Instagram, Mickey Fisher on Facebook, that sort of thing. So I'm around on social media, and I try to live tweet as much as I can with the cast. I'm always doing the West Coast. I don't do the East Coast much, 'cause I feel like they got that covered. And so I take the late shift out with those people. But I'm always sort of on and trying to answer questions and things too. So, and I appreciate you so much and like writing and talking to me and being part of that conversation online as well and tweeting. And it's really cool to be able to have that back and forth with the audience.
You're very welcome. And like I said, whenever I find a show that I enjoy, I will support it because I am a fan. I'm a huge fan of science fiction, fantasy, horror, and the more good TV shows and good movies we find that we actually get produced and put on air for us, the more joy is in my life. So.
Me too. Me too. I agree.
Oh, well, Mickey, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate you talking to me.
It's Mickey Fisher, the creator and co-executive producer for Reverie. You can find that on NBC Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. Check your local listings. And, of course, go to Hulu and binge. I know you have a Hulu account. Go binge it. Check out the show. Live tweet with the rest of us. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
Hi, I'm Sendhil Ramamurthy from NBC's Reverie, and you are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And yes, people, I think we are seeing a pretty good crop of summer programming with shows like Reverie and Wynonna Earp and Killjoys and just everything else we have, like Cloak and Dagger. Cloak and Dagger is amazing, by the way. You should go see it. These shows are getting better because they have to be better, because of the short window in the air. And I hope that some of these shows are getting enough eyes on them to warrant renewals. I think this weekend at San Diego Comic-Con, Cloak and Dagger already got renewed for a second season, so that's a good news. I believe people are waiting on a quick renewal for Wynonna Earp. Killjoys already has this season and next season in the bag, and next season, season 5, will be the final season. We've already gotten that. And, of course, The Expanse got picked up by Amazon, so we'll see that sometime in 2019. But a lot of this programming is too good to let go too soon. How about that? And yeah, vampires in Winona Earp, well worth watching. Pink vamp dust. I'm not a fan of pink, but that was an amusing way to go. And in Killjoys, oh my goodness, Killjoys, that show, I'm glad we're going to get a complete book on that show, a complete 5 seasons to wrap everything up. That show is, Killjoys is what Firefly should have been allowed to grow into. That's, I've said it before, my essay about that is on the website, sliceofsci-fi.com, and I will try not to gush more about it. I mean, it has been, what, 17 years? So, yeah, there's that. Other news coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, the first full trailer for Aquaman looks really, really good. Shazam, the first full trailer for that, looks really goofy in a good way. Some of the comments I saw on the trailer had it likened to Deadpool for DC. It didn't seem like it was going to be R-rated, but that's sort of over-the-top wiseassery is definitely present in both Billy Batson and his superhero alter ego. So that looks like it could be worth waiting for. Godzilla King of the Monsters. Oh my goodness, the trailer for that brought a tear to my eye. We're going to get all of the monsters. I believe in that trailer we have Godzilla, we have Rodan, we have Mothra, and there's one more. I'm not sure if that's Ghidorah. No, it's definitely Ghidorah, but somebody said they spotted Gamera. If Gamera is in there too, oh my goodness, how is this going to work? One person commenting on what they heard at the hall when they were talking about the movie. I think it's Rodan has an 800-foot wingspan, which means that the scale of these monsters is going to be ridiculously awesome. And yeah, you know how much I love monster movies. These monsters, these are the monster movies I grew up on. These are the monsters I grew up on, and we're finally getting a modern day take on them where CGI can do them true justice. Note here, they're not being called kaiju, they're being called titans. So go look for that trailer. You will want to watch it 3 or 4 times in a row. And also the trailer for Glass, the M. Night Shyamalan film that will be tying together Unbreakable, Split, that universe, basically confirming that those heroes and anti-heroes are part of the same world. And it looks, yeah, I can't wait for that one either. And there's one more little surprise out there. You should be able to find it quite easily. There had been rumors that Nathan Fillion was working on a new project beyond season 2 of Con Man, which he's doing with Alan Tudyk. It's sort of a fan film. It's a fan film starring Nathan Fillion. He did it himself for Uncharted, the video game. His live-action take on the video game. They even include some spots, some action sequences that are look like gameplay. You have to see this trailer. It's a lot of fun. It's about 15 minutes of Nathan being, well, Nathan from the video game, basically. And it's well worth the watch. Go find it. You will not be disappointed. if you're a fan of the game. Otherwise, it's Nathan Fillion. How can you be disappointed anyway? But yeah, there's some other news coming out of Comic-Con, which I'll dive into later. But yeah, trailer craziness happened this weekend, and it was a beautiful thing. So if you have any questions or comments about what we have seen or what we're going to be seeing, give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976, or send an email to summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and on TuneIn and Krypton Radio. If you're listening to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. It'll let other people know that you're enjoying the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow Slice of Sci-Fi on Twitter. We're at Slice of Sci-Fi over there. You can find us on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there as well. And of course, as usual, the home base is the website, sliceofsci-fi.com. I want to thank everybody for your patronage, your donations, and your support. Every dime you send in does help keep these websites, the servers with the shows and the websites on them online. So thank you so much for your continued support after all these years. Slice of Sci-Fi has been doing this for 13 years. 2005 is when all this started. And this episode you're listening to is number 852. That's a lot of podcasting. Just saying. For those of you who have been around for a long time, again, my heartfelt thanks goes out to you for supporting and listening to this show. Your support and your enthusiasm in listening to the show really means a lot to me. If you want to help support the show, if you're a new listener or you've been away for a while, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. And if you just want to make a one-time donation, there's a paypal.me link in the show notes. I also want to throw a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for the musical themes they have provided for the show here. They've done a wonderful job. And if you like your rock and roll geek flavored, you can check out their website for some more fun, geeky parody and original compositions. Their website is sci-fried.com, and they have a YouTube channel with some pretty cool videos. Go check them out over there. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.